Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Sentimental Value, Train Dreams, and Nouvelle Vague.
I'd like to start off today talking about a film from Scandinavia. It's actually a co-production from quite a number of different countries, but it's been given an English language title, Sentimental Value. It's by Joachim Trier, who is a Norwegian filmmaker, and this movie takes place in Norway, and it deals with a Norwegian filmmaker. So here is what Sentimental Value is about. The main character, who is a pretty old guy, he's in his 70s. His name is Gustav Borg, and he is played by Stellan Skarsgård. His wife has died, and he has two daughters who he has not gotten along with in a very long time. There's some troubled family history there. But now that his wife, their mother, has died, he would like to get back together with them. And particularly, he would like to involve one of them in a new movie that he is planning. He is a filmmaker, apparently a pretty major one. There's a retrospective of his work going on right now, and he's a little bit involved with that. So we're supposed to believe that this guy is quite an important cinematic artist. But he has this troubled family life. And right now, he would like one of his daughters to play an important role in this new film that he is preparing. Her name is Nora, and she is actually herself a very gifted actress, apparently. But she acts mainly on the stage. It's a very long time since she's made a movie. And so she's a little bit surprised when he comes along with his new script. And he says, "Hi there, I want you to star in my new movie." And she says she's not going to do it because she really, really, really has bad feelings about her father because he abandoned the family, or at least she feels he abandoned the family. He certainly went away when she and her sister were young. So we find out over the course of the film that Gustav's own mother died when he was young, just a little kid, and she committed suicide, and that's something that's going to be involved in this movie of his. That's an incident in his movie, and in fact, more than an incident. It's an important event in his movie, and he has all kinds of plans for how to film this. It's going to be filmed in one take, and it's going to see the woman planning the suicide and getting ready to hang herself, and then stand, and we'll have to look at her face and wonder what he's thinking. Things like that are going on. And on top of that, very personal detail, he's going to shoot the movie in the family home. His daughters are still there. He, in fact, grew up there, and they grew up there. And he's only been there because he's been coming and going over the years since he left the family. But that house is very much a part of the movie as well. So, Sentimental Value. One of the questions that I had going into this was, how sentimental is this movie going to be with that word sentimental in the title? Well, Gustav Trier, who made the movie, is a very good filmmaker, and he has avoided the traps of over-sentimentality, but I don't think he's made quite a convincing movie either. It's a beautifully acted movie, but it all seems sort of planned out. You don't have a sense of spontaneity in this film. We have backstories from time to time, sometimes given to us by a narrator, about things that happened during the Nazi era, things that happened to the mother, and it's sort of very unrealized and sort of dropped into the movie to maybe make the film seem more deep. And it does make the film seem more deep, but not a whole bunch more deep. So I would have to say I'm giving a mostly favorable but somewhat mixed response to Sentimental Value. Again, it's very well acted. Stellan Skarsgård and Elle Fanning, who plays an American actress who is brought into this new movie that our main character is planning, they give very good performances, as do the Norwegian actresses in the other parts. Joachim Trier is a very good director of actors. So Sentimental Value, it's not really too sentimental. It just seems a little bit too planned, a little too schematic, a little too laid out like an outline that we're supposed to get involved in. And we do get involved with, largely thanks to the acting. It's a good film, as I often say, but not a great film. Sentimental Value, it's valuable, but not very, very valuable. Now I would like to turn to an American movie called Train Dreams, an odd title. It's based on a novella of that title. It was co-written and directed by Clint Bentley. And this is a film that has been getting absolute raves from so many reviewers. I can't remember when a movie has been better received than Train Dreams. Sentimental Value has also been getting very, very rave reviews. Train Dreams, I think, even more. Pretty much unanimous. And again, my feeling is it's a really good movie. I was really involved in watching it. I thought it really worked in all kinds of ways, and I like it a lot. It's a good film. Then again, it seems a little bit calculated. It seems like a movie which is so marvelously effective in its feelings that it was planned out to be marvelously effective in its feelings. And that detracted a little bit for me. Again, a lot of people will not even know what I'm talking about here. But it's a movie that is a little, in a way, is overwhelming sincerity and sweetness and depth are a part of a package that's being sold to us. So I feel it's a very, very good movie, but a movie that doesn't quite achieve real cinematic greatness. So here is what Train Dreams is about. The main character is a guy named Robert, and he is a guy who has worked with his hands his whole life. That's what he does. He has worked in the logging industry. He goes out into the woods with other loggers and cuts down trees. Obviously, this is a long time ago, around the early part of the 20th century. And he's also been very involved in working on the railroad. When the railroads start to get built in a big way, he switches from logging to working on the railroad. So this is hard, physical, manual labor, and he has done it uncomplainingly and apparently even enjoying the work. What he doesn't enjoy is being away from his family. He gets married, he falls deeply in love with a wonderful young woman, and pretty soon they have a baby, and he loves them both so much. So that's the only sort of little dark part of his life, is that he loves his wife, he loves his child, he loves having a home life with them. And of course, this is all very hard scrabble stuff. They live in a cabin out in the woods, and they have enough to get by. He earns pretty good money doing what he does, pretty good money considering that it's a physical, manual labor trade. It's not a luxurious life that they lead, but it's a life that he is very contented with and that he really, really treasures because of his great love for his wife and daughter. Well, I don't want to give too many spoilers here. One thing, but I have to mention a couple of things. One thing that happens early in the film, and I really like the way this is done, is presented in a very telegraphic way. It's really quick. You have to really look and see what's happening, which is that an Asian worker on the railroad is for some reason hauled off by some of the other workers and killed. And Robert, our main character, appears to be sort of involved in this. He has no idea what's going on, but he sort of helps out in this effort. And this torments him afterwards. So one of the big themes in Train Dreams is the torment of conscience that Robert feels after this. It's not a big thing in his life, but it's a thing in his life. He has dreams about it. Unsettling dreams, uncomfortable dreams, guilty dreams. So that's something that happens very early in the film. Again, it's really quick, but it has a lasting effect on the rest of the movie. Then there's one other thing that happens fairly early in the film, which is that tragedy strikes, and Robert loses his wife and daughter. So that is obviously something that causes him tremendous melancholy, tremendous sadness. It takes him a long time to even start to get over this. Eventually, he meets another woman, but it's very hard to tell whether that will ever evolve into anything. And these are the kinds of things that Train Dreams is about. So it is about the most ordinary things that can happen to us in our lives. We work. We have a family, tragedy strikes in certain terrible ways, and we try to get over it, and we sort of do, and we sort of don't. And yet, even though these things are such ordinary parts of ordinary lives, they are treated in a beautiful, wistful way by this movie. It's beautifully filmed, lots of gorgeous nature footage, and a lot of really, really good acting, especially by Joel Edgerton as our main character. Now, there is a filmmaker named Terrence Malick. He is best known for his war movie, The Thin Red Line, also made movies like Badlands and various others. And he is a very, very important filmmaker, although not an especially commercial filmmaker. And he makes movies that are dreamy and almost wrapped up in a world of dreams. Even when they're presenting really, really down-to-earth material, we have a feeling that we're watching a vision. Train Dreams is another movie that is totally dominated by the spirit of Terrence Malick. He could have almost made this movie. So I just want to mention that. Anybody out there familiar with the work of Malick? This is a Malick film made by somebody who's not Malick. And I thought that was kind of interesting about it. It's a really, really good movie. In fact, it's a lovely movie in all kinds of ways. I don't think it's all the way up there in the very top realm of what cinema can do, but it's a very, very fine movie. Again, Craig Bentley is a good, still pretty new director. I really look forward to seeing what future films he might come out with. Train Dreams, it's almost a real dream of a movie. And finally today, I would like to talk about Nouvelle Vague, obviously a French phrase. I translate it into English all the time as New Wave, and it's about the filmmakers of the French New Wave. Back around 1960, this group of young filmmakers emerged in France, and they revolutionized the world of film. They were hugely influential on world cinema. They were hugely influential on Hollywood. A lot of the Hollywood movies of the 60s and 70s were very strongly influenced by the works of the French New Wave. And they are, I won't name them all, but Jean-Luc Godard, François Truffaut, Eric Rohmer, and a couple of others. They were the really, really major movers and shapers, young filmmakers with revolutionary ways of making movies in terms of style, in terms of technique, in terms of acting, in terms of everything. And the most radical of them was Jean-Luc Godard, a very, very strange and interesting artistic talent who really wanted to make movies in a whole new way. He wanted to bring a kind of spontaneity into films that films had never had before. He refused to work from a script. He would write dialogue the night before or the morning before shooting a scene. He would call out the dialogue to the actors as they were acting, and he would film without sound and dub the sound later so that he could do that and give them instructions. Move over here, and now say this. And they would have to stand there and listen to his instructions. His first feature film was a movie called Breathless. Came out in 1960, and this was the most revolutionary and influential of all of the revolutionary and influential films by the French New Wave. And if anybody has not seen Breathless by Jean-Luc Godard, film from 1960, I strongly recommend looking at it. To my eyes, at least, it looks as fresh and alive and vital today as it has ever looked. It's a really, really amazing film. And again, a hugely important film in mid-20th century film history. And still today, filmmakers still study the French New Wave, and they still learn from their tricks and their various techniques and ways of doing things, and above all, for their great love of putting spontaneity into their movies. And nobody did that more than Jean-Luc Godard. Well, I said that Nouvelle Vague, with its French title, is a French movie. It's actually a French-American co-production, and it was directed by a very American filmmaker, Richard Linklater. Just a few weeks ago, I was talking about a biopic he made called Blue Moon, all about a great American songwriter. Well, almost at the same moment, Rick Linklater has come out with a second film, Nouvelle Vague, which is a biopic about one moment in the life of Jean-Luc Godard. This is simply a little retelling of what it must have been like for Godard and his cast to shoot the movie Breathless. When he was trying out all these new techniques, he had never made a feature film before. He was experimenting and trying things without even knowing if they would work, but he was such a brash young talent, so confident in his own talent, so sure that he could pull this off, that he tried things that had never been done before, and well, they worked, because Breathless is still a movie which is very much watched today. It's just a lovely movie. It's a lot of fun to watch. It's not a great film, again, I have to say that. Rick Linklater has done more profound work. It's just a very breezy and light and lively tribute by Richard Linklater to a filmmaker and a film which obviously influenced him very, very much. Now, I have to say, I've done a couple of books on Jean-Luc Godard. I wrote a book about him called The Films of Jean-Luc Godard, Seeing the Invisible. I edited a book of interviews with him called Jean-Luc Godard Interviews. So I really know this material pretty well. And in fact, many of the characters who appear in Nouvelle Vague, the other New Wave filmmakers, some others who are around the edges of the story, were people who I met or interviewed or even knew many, many, many years ago. And it's a lot of fun for me to revisit the whole idea of the French New Wave at this key moment in really world cinema history back in 1960 when Jean-Luc Godard was finishing Nouvelle Vague and making it his film Nouvelle Vague. So Nouvelle Vague is a movie about the Nouvelle Vague, a movie that imitates the French New Wave by being about the French New Wave. I should mention that the star of the movie Breathless was Jean Seberg, an American actress, and she is very, very nicely played in this movie. It's a good, good movie, very well acted, with all kinds of interesting characters. If you love movies, then you will love Nouvelle Vague, because it's very much a movie about movie making. And if you don't really care that much about the making of movies, it's still just a light, lively, and fun picture to look at it. So Nouvelle Vague, I found it a very fresh new wave to look at. It's an enjoyable film, a fun film, has some real comedy in it. I heartily recommend it. Nouvelle Vague, an American movie by an American filmmaker, all about French film. Nouvelle Vague, good picture. So that is my somewhat international story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Sentimental Value, Train Dreams, and Nouvelle Vague.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.